Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, we're live at Cobos Q. Our man Five Star from Vegas is in town, and he just stopped by, so we'll be chopping it up with Five Star in here. He's talking to Dre and some of the regulars. If you guys want to jump in, we're going to be here as a station until 3 o'clock, so you can make it in, have some of the great food, the great drinks. First set of shots are down for the day, so you better get in before the second one comes in. It's Lance. It's Dell. John is still sick, but he should be back on Monday. Maybe not in studio, but he'll be back with us at that particular time. Okay, here's the three headline stories that we will get to. Number one, the Houston Astros beat the Yankees. 2-1 was the final in that one. RJ, let's hear from Dusty Baker. The pitching has been the story here. Yeah, Alex Bregman's return to greatness, or at least goodness, or at least solidness, has been a big story. Without question, you had no Yordan playing, concussion protocol, no Jeremy Pena playing, concussion protocol, no Michael Brantley is on the injured list. And even without those three starters, the Houston Astros scraped together two runs thanks to Alex Bregman. And if you know anything about this Astros starting pitching against the Mets and Yankees, two runs is enough. That's all they need, because it was Luis Garcia giving up one run in 5 1/3. Stanek came in, got him out of that particular spot. You had Hector Neris, Rafael Montero, and of course our good friend Ryan Pressly shutting the door with a great save, striking out two, the last two batters of the inning, and the Astros win 2-1. They won 7 of the 9 games against the Yankees. At no point, or the Yankees and Mets, at no point did the Yankees and Mets ever step up to the plate with a lead in the 9-game set that they just got done playing against those two teams. And the reason was simple. The starting pitching was absolutely electric, the best 9-game run that I have ever in my entire lifetime of watching the Astros. It's the best set series of 9 games. I guarantee you, you cannot find nine consecutive games, no matter. I know everyone gets, what about Randy Johnson? What about Roy O? What about, that's great. What about Roger and Pettit? That's great. Go find me 9 straight games where they pitch better than they have in this particular. I'll wait as long as you want. Find me on social media. Okay? Dusty Baker knows. He's a manager. He's won over 2,000 games. Dusty, what'd you think about your starting pitching?
Whenever you kind of shut their offense down, I mean, that's one of the best offenses around. So our pitching was outstanding. Our bullpen was, we know, was very good. And then the games that we lost up there, you know, we didn't have a fresh bullpen like we had today. So, you know, that was good to, that was a great victory for the fans to watch. And it was great, you know, for the city of Houston, and it was great for my ball club.
Why does Papa Dusty sound like he's speaking to grandchildren who are falling asleep?
Because everyone's younger than him.
He's got that grandpa voice that he's talking real soft to his grandchildren who are falling asleep.
Because
like
he lives in a world.
Reading a book about the Yankees getting punked.
He lives in a world where everyone's at least 30 years younger than him.
Yeah, that's true.
Even the reporters, I mean, the players are at this point, some of them 50 years younger than him.
Yeah.
That's the tone. He's talking to his grandkids
he's
all the time.
He's super soft.
He's tired.
He's supposed to be hype.
Yeah. He's just out there managing him. He's tired. How much energy do you think he has?
Nah, you're right. He's tired. And I'm not sure he's getting naps these days.
Well, particularly yesterday.
You take
naps? That was
an
earlier game.
You take naps?
Not anymore. Schedules change.
Stop lying.
Schedules change. I don't take so many naps.
You don't hear I don't take naps no more.
Getting up early forces you to take naps.
Now, let's see if the Astros can keep the momentum. You know, they have a bad tendency of at home playing against lesser opponents and playing to the level of the competition at times. The Angels are coming into town, and Christian Javier goes against Lorenzen, or Urquidy Sandoval, and then Valdez versus Suarez. And today's game is 7:10. Then you've got tomorrow's 3:10, and then Sunday's got a 1:10 p.m. start. So those are the games against the Angels, and then the Royals come to town for 4 straight. So you've got 7 more games going, a 3-game set against the Angels, and then a 4-game set against the Kansas City Royals before you go out on the road to the West Coast. So we'll see if they can ride that momentum. Other big story, well, it's the beginning of free agency, and anything in the free agency from a free agency standpoint. As expected, Jalen Brunson leaves the Mavericks and ends up going to the Knicks. That was one of them. Zion Williamson, as expected, signs a rookie supermax deal, despite the fact he's played just 80 games in 3 years for the Hornets and did not play last year. He still signs that mega deal because of his potential and what he can do. I don't know if any of the free agency deals sway you at all.
Not really. And, you know, we got the bomb with Durant requesting for a trade. So it kind of froze some of the contenders who are trying, who would probably be making moves or even trades themselves to try to improve. So I think we got away. Aiden was the one that we thought would come off the board at some point, whether it be a New Orleans, a Phoenix return or, you know, going out and finding a contract and seeing a Phoenix with Max. Now he is probably on hold until Phoenix figures out where Durant or what the Nets want. So I think the Durant thing kind of paused any moves that's going to change a contender from maybe going from contender to favorite. I did find it interesting that Golden State lost Gary Payton II, who they loved quite a bit, and they wanted to pay him, but Portland wanted to pay more. Apparently Dame really wanted him on the roster, so he goes to Portland. And
he was an important piece for them,
yeah,
too.
Portland's a team who's probably going to try to build defenders around. You get Jeremy Grant. He's not a great defender, but he's better than what they had around Nurkic and Dame to kind of protect them. Gary Payton II's another one of those guys. So Portland's trying to convince Dame that they're going to be okay. And by okay, for them, it's probably a 6 or 7 seed. I don't know what they can do to become a really good team. They brought back Anthony Simons. So a lot of maintaining. And that'll be the case until Kevin Durant makes a move. And then if he makes a move to a contender, I think we see other contenders react. You look at the Bucks. The Bucks just brought everybody back. They got Joe Ingles, who's coming off an injury, but they think they're pretty good as long as Chris Middleton is healthy. So we're just waiting for KD to move, and then I'm sure Kyrie will move, and then everybody else will get theirs.
A lot of these deals were supermax extensions. Devin Booker, 5 at 224. John Morant, 5 at 231. We mentioned Zion Williamson, 5 at 231. These are all guys staying home. And then Jokic is a guy. Nikola Jokic also signed a 5-year, $270 million Supermax extension. So they're just guys getting richer than you and I are. Much, 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 much richer.
Lou Dort got his money.
But they're all staying in the same spot. Yeah, Lou Dort, who's kind of a kind of a feel-good story. Yeah, he ended up
87 over 5, I think.
Yeah, that's a good deal for Lou Dort. Yeah. You wouldn't have seen that maybe a couple of years ago. It's kind of a coming out party whenever he stepped up against James Harden in the finals in that big game 7 where the Rockets came out victorious over Oklahoma City. And then so Kevin Durant, as you mentioned, asking for a trade is a big deal because this is a huge swing the pendulum of power type of player. There's not a whole lot of those guys who become available. The Nets basically are demanding that they get proper value, so they don't care where Kevin Durant wants to go. They are trying to find the best deal possible. So if Miami and Phoenix, the two spots Durant wants to go, if they want to come up with it, that's fine. If not, they're going to find the best deal they can possibly find.
And we talked about it earlier how the Ben Simmons contract makes it difficult for the Nets to get what they want, from at least from Miami, because you can't have two guys who sign rookie max extensions. You can't trade for both of them. You can certainly have two if one of them's homegrown. So that makes it difficult for them to get Bam if Miami was even willing to trade him, because apparently Kevin Durant wants to play with Bam. Of course he does, and wants to play with Jimmy. He wants to join the core of a one seed. He doesn't want to be the guy who kind of decimates it if it's one of those two guys. And so far we've been told that the Nets don't want Ayton. So if that takes the top of Kevin Durant's list away, would the Nets do something most NBA teams don't do? Trade a star where he doesn't want to go. And the other thing is,
if you're the Nets, you don't care as long as you get what you want.
You say that, but you would think no one would care, and they always somehow do.
Well, but if somebody's willing, it's because you need a second partner willing to take that chance that they can convert you to
convert
play in
Kevin
there.
Durant. That,
yeah,
play.
Because once if they're willing to give you the deal, you don't care where he goes. That's once. As soon
I don't
as
know
he's
what
traded, that's
we
their
say
problem.
That, but I don't know why it doesn't happen more. Only unless the player is going lets it be known that I'm going to make your life difficult if you trade for me.
Well, I think sometimes it's a situation where the team is also willing to do whatever it takes. The problem is this is a really difficult one for the things you talked about with Ben Simmons' contract. You've got Kyrie Irving you're trying to move. You've got the deal with Kevin Durant that you've got to move that has 4 years on it, and you've got to find relatively equal value coming back in return from a contractual standpoint. There are talks that the Rockets could be involved in a potential 3-4 team trade, but the question becomes, how can they do that when Eric Gordon is the one guy, you know, you start with Eric Gordon, but you'd have to, you know, be involved in a lot more pieces to try to make that happen if you were to get involved at all. But those first-round picks you get from the Nets and the pick swaps, those are really big deals. So your Rockets picks, because your Rockets picks would also be protected, unprotected pick swaps, those would be extremely valuable as well.
I think the thing to consider is, particularly if you are a team or just kind of look at the landscape of the NBA and where Kevin Durant would go, is what team can trade the Nets what they want and still be a title contender? Because you're not acquiring him if you're going to be a 5 seed. You're acquiring him because you think you can win a title. So the Nets, I don't know if they really believe that, but put out there that they want I don't know if it's real, but it's been put out there that they want 2 All-Stars. If you're trading 2 All-Stars for Kevin Durant, how many All-Stars do you have on your roster? That means you're probably not winning a title if you're taking your 2 best players off the roster to get Kevin Durant. So these are that may simply be posturing, but these are the type of things you hear early in the process, and I imagine as it goes further and further along and teams start to drop out, the price will come down.
Well, we've all got our problems to worry about, and one of your problems might be energy bills that are skyrocketing. I'm not here to sell you an electric company. I'm here to sell you windows, because windows are where you know, your electricity bill, that's fine. If you go to a different electricity provider, you're going to save some money there. I'm sure if you find the best rate, that's great. But guess what? It's going to keep blowing the same amount because your windows are leaky. It's the window, stupid. That's where you have a chance to save the money. 40% off, a 40% decline in your energy bill when you up to 40% when you get new windows. Brand new windows can make that level of difference in your home, because leaky windows are your number one culprit for not only just a dusty home, but also for issues with air conditioning slipping out and that warm, humid air of Houston slipping in. If your house is always humid, you probably have an issue with the efficiency of your home. Check your windows. You know what else? Your siding. That's another one as well. So windows and siding, and Allstate Windows and Siding, they've got you covered on both fronts. Allstate Windows and Siding has Texas tough windows made right here in Texas ready for you. 25% off your windows. They have discounts for cash, veterans, and senior citizens. You can also get 36 months of no interest financing. So make no interest payments for 36 months to pay off your windows and your siding right now when you take advantage of AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com. Mention ESPN 97.5. Get 25% discount off of your windows. ESPN 97.5. Make sure you mention that. AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com.
ESPN 97.5. Godfather of Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, joining us right now is our old friend from Las Vegas who happens to be in town. He came from Houston, moved out to Las Vegas. It's 5-star. You know him. He had a run like I've never seen in the playoffs and into college football, and it was just like a winning. It was definitely the NFL playoffs. It was a crazy hot streak that you had, and carried it over into the NCAA tournament. I know you're a guy who does stuff with tennis, a lot of tennis action in the morning.
Yeah,
you live in Vegas, so I find it interesting. I wanted to bring you on. You came out here. You're here right now, staying around Houston for, you know, seeing family, people, whatever it is. You're just hanging out in Houston for a little bit. Tell people your background, right? We know you as the guy who gives us picks.
Right.
And you're in Vegas as a professional gambler in Vegas right now.
Right.
That's not how you got started. You didn't come out of the womb picking games.
No. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. It's always great to be back in Houston. we're in an area that I have a lot of love for, man. I lived right across the street from here for 7 years. Actually, when I lived over here, this place wasn't open yet because I would have been over here all the time. Yeah, it was a grocery store over here back then where we walk over here and get stuff. I lived right there at the Lofts for the longest. But my background is I'm originally from Louisiana. I grew up in a small town called Monroe that everyone in Houston knows about Monroe. I was there with my grandparents, but my mom and dad both were living in Houston. But after they got divorced, I went to Louisiana for a time. Sports fanatic, started playing football about 7 years old and just became obsessed with the game. To the point where I'm at home practicing like I'm the coach instead of being a player. You know, I love the intricacies and the details of the game. And later on, it served me well because as I grew older, I learned about sports betting because some older guys, they had these pick'ems that they used to do in Louisiana. And what you do is they give you a list of all the NFL games for the week, and you say who's going to win. And so when the guys start saying, you always got a football man with you, like, hey, who's going to win this week? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just from knowledge of me, so in love with the game, these guys are out moving around doing what they do as adults. I'm sitting at home 24/7. All I'm doing is watching, you know, NFL stuff. So I was able to give them winners, and that kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, hey, I'm pretty good at picking these games. Moved to Houston back with my dad about 96 and was here up until the time that I moved to Las Vegas. A lot of close friends. We decided to get into the music business because that was the thing to do in 97, 98 around here. You know, everyone had a studio. Ended up becoming real close with Little Troy. He became a mentor of mine. DJ Screw was another mentor of mine. And I met a whole lot of great dudes, man, from the south side of Houston. And I'm able to say that I'm friends with a lot of people who've influenced culture around here. And I was part of, you know, that whole movement. And I just ended up getting back to football because during this time, all of my guys who were doing the music were also sports fans. Because, you know, like they say, all athletes want to be rappers and rappers want to be athletes. So we started out gambling a lot on Madden, and then I started telling these guys, like, hey, man, who you got on the game this weekend? And I ended up getting a little pool started amongst guys in the industry of just betting sports. We all, you know, just fade each other. There's no points involved. It's just I got a side. And that kind of parlayed to later on getting with a Greek guy out here who had one of the bigger books, and he saw that my influence on the south side, and he, you know, gave me a book to run, and that's what really got me into knowing the numbers of sports betting and things like that. And it just grew from there, man. And then I started frequenting Vegas every weekend because I got tired of having to argue with guys about getting points. And, hey, man, you want the favorite, but they're two right. Touchdowns. You're not going to give me a fair bet. So I started going to Vegas, and I've been going to Vegas since 2000. So I was very established when I got there already. People knew me from coming from Houston all the time. So it's definitely my second home.
That's kind of your background. We're going to have to break here in a second because we got Brian Fisher coming up to talk about our college football. We had a guest schedule, but I do want to let people know they, even though you're not doing anything with us right now, I mean, right. We will be in the football season, they can still let people know how they can follow
Definitely.
You and get some of the stuff that you're giving out right
Definitely.
Now.
Definitely. Hey, you guys go and please subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's 5-Star in Vegas Sports Investments. I'm still on Schoon TV. We'll be back on daily on August the 1st. We're taking a break. This is a sports bettors break. It's the downtime. I'm still having to get it in for my clients. And we did some Wimbledon this morning and did pretty good. We won with Niemeyer this morning at -130. So we're doing that. And, of course, MLB, I'm doing pretty good. But I've started. I'm going to give people a daily bet. If you guys follow me on Twitter, at 5-Star in Vegas, spell out the 5, just because I know a lot of people, you know, follow me strictly for bets. So I want to make sure that I keep giving them, you know, some winners, man, and keep everybody with their pockets rolling, man, until we get back to football season and we're every week.
Just make sure y'all reciprocate. He's helping you. You help him.
Yeah, that's right.
5-Star, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming out today to Cobos Live. We appreciate
it. Always, man. You know you're a friend, Lance. I appreciate you.
Good to see you. Coming up next, Brian Fisher. We got some college football talk. Speaking of college football, that's our guy, 5-Star. We talk college football, pro football with him. Every week during the football season, we get the winners, and you get those chicken dinners. Now let's talk about Simple Seats. They put a lot of people in the stands yesterday for the Astros and the Yankees because you know why? Simple Seats has the best prices. They have the best seats, no fees, no fees ever. When I say fees, you know, some people have transfer fees. They have, what is it? The stupidest one that I ever hear is, your convenience fees. Convenience fees? Y'all are hitting me with fees on two different tickets I'm buying. What's convenient about it? I'm downloading these tickets anyway. So the bottom line is you need to go with Simple Seats. They never have fees, never. There's zero fees for anything, and that's not hyperbole. They literally have no fees. Whatever the ticket says it is on the website, that's what it's going to be when you check out. And it's super easy for you to take a look at. Just go to SimpleSeats.com, find the game you want, and either get them in the particular areas that you want, the exact, you know, location, section 303, section 110, or do zone seating, which is actually going to be an area of the park. They pick the tickets, and then you save the money. They'll give you additional savings. SimpleSeats.com, that's your one-stop shop for local sporting events, especially those Astros games right now. SimpleSeats.com, use promo code Lance10 for a $10 discount on your first order of $50 or more. Lance10 is the promo code, SimpleSeats.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
Okay, talking some college football. We've had Rockets talk. We've had Astros talk, basketball talk, baseball talk. We've had college football talk. Joining us right now is a college football expert from Athlon Sports, who has been around the business for a while and is a graduate of USC, which is very pertinent for this conversation. We bring in Brian Fisher. Brian, first of all, welcome to the show. And so USC and UCLA are headed to the Big Ten. While it won't take place until 2024, I can tell you that is going to make for some interesting road games in 2022 and 2023. When USC and UCLA go on the road. As a USC graduate, first of all, I want to get a – not as a college football expert necessarily, but as a USC graduate, what are your initial emotional feelings about leaving the Pac-12 and going to the Big Ten?
I really don't have any emotional ties, I guess, to USC. I've been in this business for so long that, those things really don't kind of pop up in my day-to-day life. But it is kind of sad to know that, this Pac-12 conference going back to the Pac-8 days, just the connections that USC and UCLA have, it's kind of tough to think about all that history kind of being tossed aside, it really in the name of money. I think that's what has certainly been driving this decision. And, to think those rivalries with Stanford, with Cal, those trips that, a lot of USC alums really do value going up to the Bay Area and having those football games against some historic rivals and really even the Olympic sports, all that rich history kind of being tossed aside for a money grab here with the Big Ten. That is kind of the downside of things. But on the flip side, I think if you asked a USC fan or a UCLA basketball fan to have Indiana come into, Pauley Pavilion a little bit more often, that sounds appealing. Playing Ohio State, if you're a USC football fan, a little more regularly, those things are going to matter down the road for some of the fans. But I think everybody's still it's just in a bit of shock at kind of the news of the day yesterday and how this will eventually reverberate throughout college athletics.
Brian, from the outside, people might point to the downturn in performance by USC. UCLA has been up and down really my entire life. I grew up on the West Coast too, from Bob Toledo to what they are now. Is it a former commissioner Larry Scott problem? What led to this move that kind of seems like it'll change the Pac-12 forever?
Well, I think Larry Scott certainly shares in some of the blame. I don't think he's responsible for everything. I think a lot of it does kind of lay at the hands of school presidents throughout the Pac-12 that really did not understand that they needed to invest and really focus on those major revenue sports. I mean, George Kliavkoff, when he took over as commissioner, he came out and said it. We need to invest in football and men's basketball, to make a dent and to make some waves as a conference. And that was, years of kind of being pushed aside by a lot of presidents that did not see how much it really can mean to their universities and mean to their athletic departments to have a good football team, have a good men's basketball team, go deep in March Madness. And, for all the fun and everything happening on the Olympic sports and winning all those national titles, they did not have the impact that, we're seeing now in terms of those big time brands in football and men's basketball. So, there's a lot of blame to go around. I think really at the end of the day, it does come down to that TV deal that was signed about a decade ago and just having the length that it was. You know, the Big Ten was so savvy, going back to Jim Delaney, doing a shorter term TV deal to where you go in after all the big time players had signed their big deal, so you know what the market rate is, and then coming to market before them right now, to where you can get $1 billion a year. You know, that was a genius move by Jim Delaney at the time, and really made the long term link that the Pac-12 was just kind of stuck with, really contributed to this factor and in this departure.
I don't want to overstate it, but I do think it needs to be stated. Maybe it won't be a factor at all moving forward for most of the fan bases. But one of the things I think that appealed to a lot of college football fans, college sports fans, is that it wasn't pro sports and that it wasn't, everything wasn't ruled by money. There was still a love of the school that you may have gone to school to, or maybe your parents did, or your wife did, or your husband did, whatever the case may be. And it was something that transcended the love that you may have for an NFL team, at least for some people. I question whether or not that's going to die off with the NIL the way it is, with the player movement the way it is, with the constant conversations about how much TV deals are now and the revenue of how much a head coach is getting paid. There's a new record here or there. Is college football going to love that? Are they going to lose that quaint ideology and the romanticized version of college athletics versus the pros? Is that officially dead now?
I think so. And certainly it has been moving in that direction for a long time. I think not just NIL, but I think just the dollar figures being thrown around has turned off some people. But I think the flip side, though, is also that, you are can bring in more of those casual fans because there will be bigger brands matched up more often. And promoted the right way on TV and across different platforms. I think, that is kind of the saving grace of college athletics now that has really kind of grown into that solid number two behind the NFL is that there are appealing more towards national fans. I mean, this is so much a regional, enterprise for so many years. I mean, it was all about your conference play and, maybe at the end of the year you'd have that crossover at a bowl game or in March Madness or something like that. And we're going to get more of that. We're going to have more major media markets. You're going to get more fans in New York and Chicago, in addition to the ones that are going to tune in. From Ames, Iowa, or Starkville, Mississippi. So I think it does kind of go both ways, but definitely that romanticism has been lost. And I think more than anything, everybody kind of understands this is a big business now, and it's starting to behave like one. And that is something that is going to rub some people the wrong way, but also others are going to understand that it does kind of open up other avenues where you can succeed.
Brian, the Big Ten is now officially coast-to-coast. Maybe, I think it's the first major conference to do this, New Jersey to L.A. I mean, we know the SEC is from Florida to Texas. As far as competition in the major sports, and particularly football, do you see something where it is still a West and East division type deal, or do you see something, maybe they don't give it the dumb name of Legends and Leaders, but do you see something where they're kind of trying to balance the divisions, or is it a non-division league going forward?
Well, I think, the travel component for not just, sports like football, but all your Olympic sports, how are you going to make sure, men's basketball is not missing class? That is a big topic of conversation, I think, coming out of this move, something the Big Ten is going to look at, quite a bit. They do have a little bit of lead time, and they will certainly have enough money to do things like charter flights for even sports you probably wouldn't right now, in terms of sending your lacrosse team across country. That will take some of the burden off, but in terms of the actual structure of things, I think it's important to keep in mind that the Big Ten's probably not done. This could be the first of several moves coming out of the conference. There could be additional members coming in. I think the college sports ecosystem and landscape still isn't quite settled. I mean, as big of a deal as Texas and Oklahoma were last year, I think this one could lead to even more fractures. You know, this is not just thinking the Big 12. This is thinking, you know, the Pac-12 quite a bit right as they come up to that negotiating table with media rights. So there's still some chess pieces that still need to move around the board. And so I think figuring that out first is going to be our priority before we can kind of really talk about divisional structure, how it leads into a championship game or anything like that. Because I think this is going to be the opening salvo of several moves, as we kind of saw from the tail end of that Texas and Oklahoma move.
Is there how many mega conferences are we officially going to see when you think it's all said and done? In terms of, I guess you maybe have to expound on this. Do you think there's going to be X amount of mega conferences and they are the only ones that will play for the college football playoffs? Or do you think all this realignment that we're going to have to see a governing body come forward and basically assuage the concerns financially of the non-Power 3, Power 4 conferences and teams that now are about to lose out on, I would assume, a lot of money when they are no longer in a Tier 1 power situation?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of already there. I mean, all you have to do is kind of look at the payouts. You look at what coaches in the SEC are making compared to peers like in the Pac-12. I mean, we're kind of already approaching the Big Two and then kind of everybody else. And I think those lines of stratification are even going to increase further with this move by USC and UCLA. And, you know, keep in mind, too, that the college football playoff, you know, come 2025, it is a blank slate. So it is certainly possible that, you know, Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren, the commissioners of the Big 12 and the SEC, kind of get together and you say, you know what, let's just have our champions play. And then everybody else can kind of do what they want. And the market is certainly, given the names involved, going to kind of gravitate to that product. So, I think at the end of the day, the structure of the postseason and the postseason access, even at the NCAA level with the men's basketball tournament and some of those things, all of that is really up for debate right now. And so I think it is going to be interesting, but we are kind of headed towards that kind of AFC, NFC model almost, in college football, and then really everybody else can kind of fill in the gaps. But there are still moves to be made, and I think, again, this is a pretty destabilizing event for college athletics. Outside of the Big Two, who know they are going to be taken care of, they know that the TV partners, the media companies, they're all in terms of promoting the Big Ten and the SEC going forward. And you really do have kind of these two big enemies going at it. And the tie-ins they each have to ESPN and Fox, I think, is another thing that everybody's got to keep in mind. You know, it's not just two big conferences going at it; it's two major media companies as well.
So we know that the Pac-12 has been affected recently. That happened yesterday. The Big 12 lost their two bell cows. The Big 10 has added. The SEC has added. The one conference that seems to, at least so far, to not be affected as far as teams leaving or added is the ACC. And they happen to have probably the worst contract of them all. Is the ACC moving to adjust that deal? Do they have to add a team to get that done? Or are they on the verge of potentially losing maybe a Clemson, a Miami, a Florida State because of how bad their deal is?
Yeah, I think that's the big talk, you know, and the ACC is certainly, although they have that grant of rights through 3036, at some point the math is just not going to work out in favor of the ACC. You know, at some point that payout with the grant of rights is just not going to make sense for Clemson and Florida State when they know they can go to the SEC and make triple what they can get. And so at some point that is going to be a big thorn in the side of Jim Phillips. And honestly, the biggest chess piece out there is still Notre Dame. Now, contractually, are they still obligated to join the ACC if they wanted to be, a football member of a conference? Yes, but there are some things where they could do that contract and still get out of it and end up joining, say, the Big Ten. You know, I think that is the big fear. You know, I think if you were an ACC folk, a couple years ago, or even, you know, say 6 months ago, when there's still hope of a college football playoff expansion. You know, being away, somehow forcing the Irish to join the league to where you can renegotiate the contract was certainly ideal. But now that's looking a little less likely. And I think that is the thing for both Jim Phillips, the rest of the ACC leadership, is how can we secure that future with Notre Dame? And then how can we make sure that we can either add members to where we are one of those super conferences and trigger that renegotiation with ESPN to get more value? That is kind of the focus, not only over the next month or 6 months, but really the next couple of years. And whether they end up doing that is everybody's question, but the bottom line is the ACC is still going to be behind the Big Ten and the SEC, and that gap is going to create a lot of wanting from Florida State, from Clemson, to say, you know what, maybe we can just go ahead and jump ship right now, knowing that we're going to be taken care of down the road.
I wonder if this is what it's finally going to take for Notre Dame to stop acting like they're better than everybody, Dell. You and Brian, as a USC fan, Dell is a Miami Hurricane fan. You know you don't like that Notre Dame thinks they're better than everybody, and yet here they are.
It's a part of life, Lance. I don't know.
Is Notre Dame powerful enough that they can just sit there forever and be basically an independent who will play a conference schedule but still maintain their independence? They can't possibly do that, right? Eventually, they're destined for the Big Ten. They always have been. Surely they'll eventually be a Big Ten team. Now maybe, Brian?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two factors working for that end. Number one is there are younger alum, kind of moving up into university leadership and becoming prominent positions of power. And as that happens, I think there are people that are more open-minded to Notre Dame joining the conference. They are pretty insistent and have been recently, but you can always be insistent right up until the moment you change your mind, right? So at this point, the biggest thing for the Irish has always been accessing that college football playoff or accessing any kind of those postseason structures. And so, there was obviously the thought that the ACC could maybe leverage their position negotiating, what the future of the college football playoff could be and saying, you know what, you got to be a member of a conference if you want to make the playoff. Well, that would be one way to force Notre Dame to join. Now, maybe it's the Big Ten saying, if you want to be a member of the playoff, you got to be a member with us. And so that would really cause the Irish, I think, to kind of think about where they want to be. Think about it, just the gap in rights. Their media deal with NBC is also coming up in the not too distant future. So maybe they're seeing and saying, look, we're only getting $15 million right now. Even if you double that, there's still a $20-25 million gap between us and the Big Ten team that we are competing with. Not just in terms of the Olympic sports, but certainly in football, we want to be competing at the highest level. We want to make sure that Notre Dame brand is out there on the biggest stages across the country. And now here's an opportunity to do that by joining the Big Ten. So I think it is certainly on the table, and that is the big domino that I think everybody is going to be looking for in this process over the next couple of weeks. Is this a move that ultimately leads to Notre Dame joining the Big Ten? And that is what everybody is going to keep an eye on. And I think the Irish are at least a little bit more open to the idea than they were a year, two, three, four, 5 years ago as well.
That's Brian Fisher from Athlon Sports talking to college football with us. Brian, we appreciate the time, and thanks for checking in.
Great to be on with you guys.
When we come back, our final segment here at Kobos, and we will get into news of the weird before Josh and Vanessa are going to take you on to the Killer Bees, where we're going to be right here the entire station until 3 o'clock at 2012 Rusk. So make sure you get out here, get some great food, some great drinks. And don't forget, the game tonight starts at 7:10. Well, this is a pregame, and last night it was definitely the postgame spot as well. So whether you're pregaming, postgaming, or you just don't have a ticket to the game and you want to watch, they got a bazillion TVs here. So make sure that you come check out a game here at Kobos. Coming
we'll
up next.
Just inform the game's on Apple TV, right? That's what you're saying.
Tonight's on Apple TV. So those of you, guess who has Apple TV?
Kobos.
So if you don't have Apple TV and you're not going to the game, looks like you're going to be over here at Kobos at 2012 Russ. Coming up next, we've got news of the weird.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
Isn't it weird?
This is so weird.
Time now for News of the Weird on The Bench.
Boy, what the hell's wrong with you?
Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
News of the Weird is brought to you by Simple Seats. Better prices, no fees. It's that simple. Get your seats over at simpleseats.com. Promo code Lance10. This is going to be a fast one, so I'll try to keep it to the very best one. I picked this one out just for you. If you secretly wish that you could have taken down Volturi in Twilight, then you're best prepared to purchase this real-life Vampire Slayers kit. So listen to this, Dell. You can get this.
Uh-huh.
It's got all the essentials to be a Vampire Slayer. It's 19th century nobleman. Is who initially had it, Lord Malcolm Haley, who kept guns, crucifixes, holy water, and a wooden stake. You get a pair of matching pistols, mm-hmm. brass powder flask, a Gothic Bible, a wooden mallet, a stake, brass candlesticks, rosary beads, and Metropolitan Police paperwork from that period.
What about me suggests that I want to be a vampire slayer?
Because you look like you would want to spend 24. I'm mostly going off of the Evanescence thing.
you're drawing connections between that really doesn't exist, and
you strike
and Twilight.
Me as a Twilight fan. No. Yes, you strike me as a Twilight fan.
No, twinkly vampires ain't my thing. No.
All right. How about this? Witnesses told 2GB Radio Paul Lawhood Jr., who runs a self-titled funeral service in Green Acre, this is in Sydney, Australia, turned up outside the Catholic office on Barnett Avenue at the same time as John Francis, the Granville-based Sympathy Funerals. Under standard operations, funeral cars must check into the deceased's receptive office before a vehicle from the cemetery leads the hearse and the rest of the procession to the grave. As the funeral checked in, the pair began arguing, and before you knew it, Mr. Larhood approached Mr. Francis and punched him in the face, leaving him with a bleeding lip and nose. The scrap ensued after that funeral.
So
Del, would you like to be in?
So the synopsis is two funeral directors got in a fight?
Yeah. They're there because somebody died, and you're supposed to show respect. And two funerals.
So they're ambulance chasing for the deal? Is that what they're doing?
I got a better one for you. How about this? Carnival Cruise Line. It's a New York City-bound cruise. The Coast Guard had to get called in because there ended up being a fight at 5:20 in the morning on the dance floor that 40 to 60 people were involved in that lasted a full hour.
Now, who has the energy for an hour-long fight?
Well, I did the research on this one, as a matter of fact, and it turns out that the fight actually started. I may have closed it. It actually started because two of the people on there were involved in a threesome, and their partners found out about it, and so a big-ass fight started.
So it was a threesome that wasn't confirmed.
It was not a sanction.
It wasn't sanctioned by
the
partners?
It was not a sanctioned one.
Huh.
And it turned into a great big fight.
So, Lance, would you involve yourself in a threesome without telling your partner? Would you do that, Lance?
No.
Would you?
No. Stop playing the role of John Granato. Nobody needs to play the role of John Granato. You do that enough. How about this? Have you ever stuck a nickel up your nose?
No, nickel. I wouldn't stick anything
in
anywhere.
In your nose?
No.
Okay. Well, this kid did. Umar Kumar vaguely remembers shoveling the silver coin up a nostril when he was 4. He forgot all about it. He forgot about it until he sneezed it out 10 years later.
I don't believe
it. And a snotty nickel shot out of his nose.
How far up?
Does this kid look like a liar?
He looks like her heel, so yes.
Like a little Raheel.
He looks like a little
Raheel.
So, yes.
Yeah, I guess now Raheel would lie about something
he
like
would.
That.
He would. For the clout?
Yes, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, that's true. Raheel would clout chase for saying he shoved a nickel up there. A Burger
you
King
don't
worker.
You hear the music, sir?
Oh, you know what? Forget this Burger King worker and his GoFundMe that's gone past $155,000. Guess you don't want to find out how you can make $155,000.
Apparently not.
Bottle of farts, I can tell you that one works for some women. Not for us, though, Del. We can't do
that. Sitting on cakes, too.
Cakes works too. All kinds of weird stuff that I never thought would make money.
Not
make
for
money
us,
now.
But for
not
the
for
other
us.
Gender, yeah.
The other gender can get paid. That's going to do it for us. Coming up next, we've got Josh, and he's sitting in for your boy Paul and Vanessa. They're going to be here at all day long where the whole station's here at Cobos Q at 2012 Rusk at Edo. So make sure you guys come out here, have lunch, have some drinks, watch the show. Thanks, and have a great weekend. Go Astros. Punk those Angels tonight.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.